Welcome to History Unpacked. If you enjoy the content, then consider subscribing. We post every week and we welcome any feedback. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Chicago, 1929. This city was pulsing with jazz, speakeasies, and a booming black market for illegal liquor. But behind the glitz of the roaring 20s, rival gangs were carving up the city's underworld with bullets. And on one bitterly cold February morning, that conflict reached a chilling peak. Seven men lined up against a wall in a north side garage. Seconds later, they were riddled with bullets. The city had seen violence before, but never like this. In today's episode, we will be discussing the story of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Let's rewind to the 1920s. The United States was in the grip of Prohibition, a nationwide ban on the production and sale of alcohol. While the law was meant to promote morality, it had the opposite effect in cities like Chicago. Booze didn't disappear, it just went underground. And controlling the illegal liquor trade became the fastest way to power, wealth, and war. Organized crime was heavily involved in this trade, and the American Mafia was connected to the illicit alcohol trade in a major way. Eric actually covers the rise of the American Mafia in an earlier episode, so I recommend watching this fascinating episode to get an understanding of the Mafia in America at this time. At the heart of Chicago's gangland war was Al Capone, the infamous boss of the South Side. Slick, strategic, and ruthless, Capone made millions through bootlegging, gambling, and extortion. He even maintained a strange kind of public charm, posing as a man of the people. But behind the scenes, he was fighting a brutal turf war. His main rival, George Bugs Moran, leader of the Northside Gang, Irish-American, hot-headed, and fearless. Moran hated Capone with a passion. Their feud had already claimed many lives. But Capone had something Moran didn't: strategy and resources. And in 1929, Capone was ready to end the rivalry once and for all. The plan was simple. Capone wanted Moran and his top men dead. But killing a gang leader wasn't easy. They were always protected, always moving. So Capone's men set a trap. They hired a small-time criminal named Fred Killer Burke and a crew of hitmen from out of town to avoid suspicion. A call was made to Moran's gang, offering them a cut-rate shipment of high-quality whiskey. The drop was arranged for the morning of February 14, 1929, at 2122 North Clark Street, a garage in Lincoln Park that served as Moran's headquarters. The bait was set. It was a cold Thursday morning on Valentine's Day. Seven men were inside the garage waiting. Amongst them were Moran's top enforcers, Frank and Peter Gusenberg, Albert Kachalek, Adam Heyer, Reinhard Schwimmer, and John May the mechanic, and James Clark, Moran's brother-in-law. Then the door opened. Eyewitnesses outside saw two men in police uniforms enter, accompanied by two others in plain clothes. It looked like a routine bust. The seven men were ordered to stand against the wall. No one resisted. They assumed it was a police raid. But what happened was no arrest. The fake cops pulled out Thompson submachine guns, Tommy guns, and unleashed a storm of bullets. It was an execution. In less than a minute, over 70 rounds were fired. Bodies collapsed to the floor. Blood pooled on the concrete. The gunmen calmly walked out, pretending to escort the plainclothes shooters as prisoners, another trick to fool witnesses. Inside the garage, all seven victims lay dead or dying. Only John May's dog, whimpering in a corner, survived. The massacre stunned the nation. Newspapers splashed the photos across the front pages, particularly the haunting image of the bodies slumped against the garage wall. It was front page news, coast to coast. Chicago citizens, already weary of gangland violence, were horrified. Even seasoned cops were shaken. The scale and the brutality were unprecedented. And yet, Bugs Moran survived. By sheer chance, he was running late that morning and had seen the supposed police enter the building. Sensing danger, he turned around and walked away, unknowingly dodging death by minutes. When reporters asked Moran about the shooting, he famously replied, "Only Capone kills like that." Everyone suspected Al Capone, and honestly, he had every reason and resources to do it. But proving it, that was another story. Capone had been smart. He was conveniently in Florida at the time of the massacre. His men had used out-of-town killers, and without surviving witnesses, there were no direct links. Police eventually tracked the getaway car to a rented garage belonging to Fred Burke. Inside, they found weapons, police uniforms, and stolen vehicles. Ballistics tied Burke to the massacre, but by then, he'd vanished. The case went cold. Even though Capone was never formally charged, the massacre cast a long shadow over him. The public image he'd carefully crafted was shattered. The St. Valentine's Day massacre was a turning point. The sheer violence forced the federal government to act. President Herbert Hoover, under mounting pressure, ordered federal agents to pursue Capone more aggressively. Not for murder, but for something easier to prove, tax evasion. Just 2 years later, in 1931, Capone was convicted and sentenced to 11 years in federal prison. It wasn't justice for the massacre, but it took him off the streets. As for Bugs Moran, his influence dwindled. With most of his gang wiped out, he never regained his former power. He slipped into petty crime and died in prison in 1957. The St. Valentine's Day massacre became more than a crime. It became a legend. It has inspired films, books, and endless mob stories, from The Untouchables to Boardwalk Empire. The image of the seven bodies against the wall became a symbol of organized crimes called brutality. The garage where it happened stood for decades, but was eventually demolished. Some of the bricks from the bullet-riddled wall were preserved, and they now sit on display in Las Vegas at the Mob Museum. It's a chilling reminder of how power, greed, and violence collided on one winter morning, and changed the face of organized crime forever. So, next time you hear about Valentine's Day chocolates and roses, remember that in 1929, in a garage in Chicago's North Side, the only gift exchange was gunfire.